Well, I moved into this room, if you could call it that, a week ago. I never do what I'm supposed to do, hardly even know my name.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for listening on this Monday morning. We really do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line if you would like to weigh in on anything. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. Y'all know him well down in our listening area. State Representative Chris Pringle of Mobile joins us online. Good morning, Representative. How are you doing?
Morning, Jeff. Doing great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. I guess last week was the big week. We finally got the data from the census. And I guess just your reaction to it, I don't think it's too many surprises. Rural Alabama shrinking, and the places that are really growing across the Bay in Baldwin County and North Alabama, obviously.
Yeah, it was interesting, but we've kind of known that. Counties like Lee County have grown, Madison, Limestone County, Tuscaloosa County, Shelby County, Baldwin County, they've really grown. But some counties have really, really lost population, like Dallas County.
What do you, I guess that is, I don't know, it's probably out of your purview here as with reapportionment, but is it a good trend? Or do you want to see kind of growth across the board typically?
I would like to see it in Alabama, but it's kind of trending. Certain states and areas of states are declining in population. It's about economics. It's, when there's no economic growth or jobs, people have to leave. And a lot of what we're seeing, I believe, in a lot of Alabama is lack of economic opportunity in certain areas. Because where we have job growth, population growth is there.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk that the trend would somehow reverse, especially now that we've had COVID and people would leave the cities and go to rural Alabama. That's going to take a little time before we see that show up, one would assume.
Oh, we won't see that till the next census. I mean, you'll see that in some of the updates over the years, but, it's way too soon for that to appear in these numbers. Because remember, these numbers were from April, last April. So this is when the official census count ended. Because we were supposed to have these numbers in December. The numbers that were just released were supposed to cover the states in December. We're just now getting them. So they were delayed because of COVID-19.
How much work you got cut out for you? How much has the state changed from the 2010 census till this census?
Well, let me put it this way. The numbers that have been released that were sent to the state of Alabama are now being loaded into the computer, and it will take 5 days to load all the information into the computer. 5 working days. So, You can't even go into our office now and click on a computer and start working. It's going to take a couple more days to get the information we need to work off of. Because, remember, we work off what we call census blocks. There are 252,300 individual census blocks in the state of Alabama that we work off of. And that's a little geographic area that tells us how many people live in that area. And we use those to build those blocks in order to form legislative and congressional and state school board districts.
And then I assume once you get it in there, how does that work? Do you all huddle around a computer? I mean, it seems like you're really pressed for time as well.
Well, it's all been terribly compressed. I mean, that was the problem. Normally, we go around the state and hold public hearings. But this year, instead of being able to go around the state and do it, we're having to hold them virtually through our two-year college system. We have, I think it's 28 public hearings scheduled where the people can come in and we'll be available via teleconference for people to, we'll have their area up and they can tell us what they like, what they don't like, what they'd like to see. They want their, how they want the lines in their counties drawn. We'll take all that information, we'll gather all that information and start working on a set of plans. And then September 30th, we'll get the final exact numbers and we'll bump those numbers up against the numbers we have now, the preliminary numbers, to make sure that we're within our deviations and we think we'll be compliant with federal law And then and only then will we draw a final set of plans that we'll bring before the legislature.
And that whole process, all along we've been hearing October, fall, does that still seem feasible?
I hope so, because once the legislature convenes and they pass a bill and it goes to the governor and is signed, then all that information has to go to the counties. And then the registrars have to go through every registered voter's file and make sure they're assigned to the right voting precinct and assigned to the right legislative and congressional district. Every voting record has to be updated. And then they have to get a count of how many people are in each voting precinct and how many different ballots they have. There are well over 4,400 different ballots in the state of Alabama, because some voting precincts are split by, they might be in two different House seats, maybe two different Senate districts. So there's a split in some of those voting precincts, and they each get different ballots. And all those ballots have to be, they have to develop those ballots, they have to print those ballots and get them ready so they can mail them out prior to the May primary. That's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes.
Now, it seems we kind of dodged a bullet, so to speak, with not losing the congressional seat, but this process traditionally, typically, somewhat controversial. Do you anticipate that, or is that just something that's a given no matter what you're doing in these reapportionment processes?
Well, it's always an emotional process. I mean, we'll go into so many of these counties that have lost population, and we have to draw the districts based on population. And here you have counties that are that county and the counties around it have all lost population, and every House district is going to have to gain approximately 2,300 people. So where do we go to find the populations to get the people? Because it's the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. It's one man, one vote. It's equal proportional representation. It's the goal we strive for. And then we have, certain counties that have just exploded in population, like Pauling County, Limestone County, Madison County, Shelby County. And, all those districts will have to geographically get smaller because of the population increase in them.
What do you think, as far as our area goes, I assume Baldwin County is going to change a little bit, but to me, it looks like a lot of this, the growth wasn't that, or the decline of population and growth wasn't that tremendous. Is it going to be significantly different, or can you even speak on that?
I mean, Baldwin County gained almost enough people to have a whole nother House seat. So, I mean, they grew. Mobile County stayed pretty even. Of course, Washington, Clark, Monroe, and Escambia all lost population. So it's going to be a challenge to kind of draw some of these districts. Yeah, because Baldwin County is going to be easier, because all you got to do is make them smaller. But, I've got to find population for, Brett Easterbrook in Washington County and Alan Baker in Escambia County. Of course, Harry Shiver's retiring, but the retirements make it a little bit easier, because it gives us a little more wiggle room to draw lines, because we're not, that there's not an incumbent in that district.
What, the way this works is, since you're the House chairman, and then you have a Senate counterpart with Senator McClendon, that your real focus tends to be the House, and then the Senate handles the Senate, and then you kind of agree on that. Is that how this traditionally works?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to work much closer with the Senate than I will, and I will work much closer with the House members than he will. It makes it easier that way.
And that's really where your expertise lies, is in the House, right? Because you know the guys. Those are your colleagues. Those are the guys you interact with every day. How much input do they get into this process?
A lot. I mean, we're going to meet individually with every member that's running for re-election, along with, the people in their communities. And we're going to take into account as much as we can of the input they give us, both at our public hearing level and in the meetings with the members. We have a beautiful facility on the third floor where you used to have to stand and lean over somebody's shoulder and look at one little computer screen. And it was very hard to have, you know, more than one person leaning over that person's shoulder. But now we have a monitor up on the wall, and the staff can put that district up, and different people can stand and kind of point at the monitor, you know, big screen, and we can adjust it and make notes off that. So it'll be nice because I can bring in, you know, entire delegations that, you know, and ask them, you know, tell a member, well, you've got to lose X number of people and the person next to you needs to gain X number. You know, how can we adjust these lines and see if we can make everybody happy?
The technology has improved, obviously, since the last census. That I guess the technology's always kind of been there. It's just not done by hand or anything, maybe like it was 30, 40 years ago or something. But you certainly can kind of, you know, test the numbers and see what works and what doesn't.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they were doing it with sheets of paper. They would roll out a piece of paper, had the census blocks on there, and they had somebody sitting in the corner of the adding machine, and they would say, this census block has 62, so 62, then the next one was, you know, 36 people, and they just sat there and added it all up till they got to the number. And now, you know, with the modern computers, I remember the first computer I saw was a mainframe. It took up almost an entire room, and now it's a laptop, basically, that can do it all. But, yeah, in those days, the courts had not ruled. You didn't have the Jingles test. You didn't have all these other underlying issues that you had to deal with in these court cases. I mean, you just kind of hit a number, and that was it. But now you've got to worry about compactness and contiguity and communities of interest, and what constitutes a community of interest, and you've got a, you know, your voting age population in the district, because if you have a district, and you know, you got to watch that voting age population also. So there's a lot more information that has to be plugged into the system that the courts are going to look at to make sure that we are fair and equitable.
And it's not demographics necessarily, but it's more about, when you do it, it's more about, I guess, the voting blocks. Maybe is it partisan? How do you determine what goes where, I guess, or is it just really up to the individual members to have a little bit of a say?
It's up to, you know, the members and the community at large. You know, we don't quite have the diversification of population that other states are faced with. Just take, I'm going to say Florida, for example. You can't just say just because there's a whole little area down here that has a bunch of Cuban descendants in it, and then right over here are, you know, Puerto Ricans, that constitutes a community of interest. Well, it doesn't. They don't speak the same Spanish, or, you know, and the same thing. You can't just assume that, you know, these are actually communities of interest or protect the class of minority citizens. You have to be able to look at it and determine if they are politically cohesive and vote sufficiently in a block to elect or defeat the candidate of their choosing.
So that's interesting how you do that, because that seems to me that may, you know, you really do have to go almost like a surgical type of focus. But we, I guess, actually don't have many of those issues in Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, Alabama's faced with the issues. You know, you'll hear these terms thrown around, cracking and packing. Do you take a protected class of minority citizens and break them up and put them in multiple districts and deny their ability to be a politically cohesive community? Or do you pack so many people into a district that they lose influence on the other districts? I mean, the layers of this is like peeling an onion, you know, and the courts won't really tell us what we can do, but they go back and tell us what we can't do afterwards. So you have to read all these court rulings and determine, well, you can't do that now. Then you go, well, can we do this? And you're like, well, we're not really 100% sure.
Well, it sounds like you got your work cut out for you, and we'll be keeping an eye on it. Representative, we got to get to a break here, but we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you, buddy.
All right, talk to you soon. That was State Representative Chris Pringle there on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Coming to you live like I do every night from the heart of Urania.